Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Brent Palm and Ashley Walker. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week, Anoka is the site of the state's first social district. Veteran deaths by suicide are on the rise. But first, federal funding to boost child care provider wages is ending, and most of America is falling off the child care cliff, not able to hire or retain workers. Minnesota is the exception. MNN's Ashley Walker sat down with Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dziedzic to learn more about the Senate's $330 million investment into the state child care industry in efforts to grow it and maintain it for Minnesotans.
The child care cliff.
Yeah.
So it was a battle just to get COVID hero pay for child care providers in the first place, and now it's going away. How is this going to impact the child care industry?
Well, so the I got to make sure I have my years right here. So at some point during the pandemic, the federal government spent a lot of money. And of course, now I don't have that exactly in front of me. So 2021, the American Rescue Plan Act, they appropriated money to help the child care industry to help avoid a child care crisis during COVID. And so that kind of helped stabilize during COVID, that helped kind of stabilize the child care industry. Getting people into child care was a problem before the pandemic. It really exploded during the pandemic. A lot of at-home child care facilities closed. A lot of these workers are well-educated, but they're not well-paid, and so getting them to stay in that industry has been a struggle. And so when, we're out talking to Minnesotans, the DFL Senate, we heard them tell us that child care is an issue. So Minnesota has a low unemployment rate and a relatively high participation rate, but we hear from a lot of people saying, I would go back to work, I just can't find child care. And we hear from people who are working struggling to maintain that child care. And so it doesn't matter where you live. This is an issue across the state. And in some communities, there's just not child care nearby. And so they have to go to the neighboring community to find child care. So that is an issue that we have been hearing about. And so knowing that this federal funds were running out, we started looking at and have been looking at how can we make sure that we don't have this cliff. So we specifically went out and set out to make sure that we didn't have a cliff by investing money into the child care system. So we set out to help stabilize it so that we don't have this cliff. We created the Great Start Compensation Program, which is kind of the first in a nation state lift program to uplift child care workforce. So that, again, we went after it in many different ways. We increased the basic sliding fee child care assistance program funding so that we can get more into it and make sure families can stay in that program. And then we provided additional money in the deed, in the jobs bill, in the education bill, in the early education bill, in the tax bill, and actually even in the bonding bill that provide funding to help maintain and build this child care system that we have to, again, allow as many workers that are looking for child care have access to that affordable child care that they need.
And Minnesota definitely has a lot of people that are working that need child care, especially with big hotspots like Mayo Clinic, stuff like that in Rochester.
Yep.
So you said that we're doing something different. We're putting the money towards the child care industry in Minnesota, and that's great. But the numbers for those people that are working in the child care industry has gone down. Is this a kind of a way to get people to come and apply out of the state?
Yeah, so, well, I think we looked at so during the pandemic, when we were using those federal dollars, we told them to put them towards the workforce. And so a lot of the providers said that that helped them stay open. And many of them increased the wages into child care. And so was what we did. Part of the different portions that we did was also to help uplift those workers, is to provide more money to help those workers get paid better. So that will help them to help raise those wages because so we need to be able to get kids into child care, but then also we need to make sure that we have this workforce staff. So like we have workforce shortages in a lot of industries, And we put money into the higher ed bill to literally make sure that we have workers to go into those fields. We included childcare in part of those targeted fields where we want to make sure that we have workers going into it. And then we need to, quite frankly, put money into it to ensure that they are being paid appropriately. You know, when you can make good money in other places, it's how do we make sure that that is a competitive area so that people do want to work there.
Definitely. It's hard when you're getting paid maybe $20 an hour as a child care provider, and you can go to a gas station with absolutely no experience, a lot less time, and you can get paid like $16 right out the gate.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why we put money to help make sure that people that want to go to school to be early educators, that they're able to help pay for that. We did new funding for retaining early educators incentive program that'll provide a competitive bonus to keep well-trained professionals in that field and to get more people into that field. You know, that's just something we need. If you don't have childcare, then people can't go to work, and that hurts businesses, that hurts families, and that hurts communities. So it is part of addressing what I see as some of the very related, integrated problems that the state is still facing, is that we have a workforce shortage in certain industries, and then to get people back into that workforce, they need childcare. And or a lot of them need childcare, so they're related. And so we, knowing that this cliff could be coming with the federal dollars going away, we wanted to make sure that we were able to address it. So where a lot of the states around us, including our neighboring states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin, didn't address this, that federal money is gone. Some of their, you know, those childcare providers and those families will be facing that cliff where we are hopeful because of this money that we put out there, we do not have the cliffs that those other states are having.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add on to this issue that we're talking about or go back and touch on?
No, we just, we listened to Minnesotans as we were talking to them. We heard them talk about the need for childcare, the need for accessible, affordable, quality childcare. And so we addressed it in many different areas. We knew that, okay, we'll put money in the Health and Human Services bill, and that can address, you know, one portion, but we put money in the bonding bill to help maybe churches get upgraded so that they could provide some child care to help maybe somebody that wants to do an in-home child care but might need a little bit of some electrical work done in their house. So we put these grants out there to help communities design and build child care centers and or to help people upgrade them because there is such a shortage. Again, we've addressed it in many, many different bills, addressing the workforce need, addressing the actual physical needs to get like a facility ready, and then getting the, how do you keep the prices affordable for families by also paying the workers so that we keep workers there. So it's a multifaceted area. And so we took a multifaceted holistic approach of how do we help get this, address the childcare need, especially knowing that this federal cliff was coming, to help, keep our economy moving forward and help communities and families stabilize and lead their lives.
Eminence Ashley Walker and Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dietzick. More Minnesota Matters after this.
It's Thursday night and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed, could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzzed driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzzed driving, because buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Anoka has been the site of the state's first social district pilot program for the last month and has become very popular. MNN's Brent Palm learns more about the future of drinking adult beverages and strolling downtown Anoka from a city official.
Well, Doug Borglund, Community Development Director for the City of Anoka, thanks for joining us today, Doug. And I guess my first question, what is the Social District Pilot Program?
Well, maybe what we should back up is before we got to this point, we started, we're always thinking about ideas, how can we, enhance our downtown? How can we bring people downtown? And Anoka is very event orientated. We have a lot of city events. We have a weekly car show. We have an annual food truck festival, which brings in about 60 different food trucks. So we're used to Riverfest is another. It's a very large craft show. And we're used to large crowds, in the 20,000 people showing up some of these events. And so we came across an idea that was kind of developing in North Carolina and South Carolina and now in Michigan and in other states, but kind of born out of COVID, but this idea of a social district. So what a social district is, it's a geographic boundary of an area that's identified that would allow people to walk around in the public realm, if you want to call that, park, sidewalk, visit other businesses within that area. They're able to carry a adult beverage or an alcoholic drink. We took that idea and one of our council members brought it to our state representative, Zach Stevenson. And it just happened to be that the state of Minnesota and the legislature were working on a large liquor bill amendment. And Zach was able to incorporate the language that was necessary to create enabling law to allow us to do a pilot program to create what is now a social district.
Okay. Well, so from what I understand, it started September 6th and it's been about a month and that was the pilot program. Can you comment, Doug, on how it's been going for the last month? Maybe the feedback you've been getting from residents, business owners alike?
Yeah, it's been extremely positive. From a city administration standpoint, it's gone smooth. I mean, we've worked close with our businesses. From a policing standpoint, there hasn't been really any issues at all. Maybe a few educational moments. So now beverages have to be in a social district cup, but really not a big deal. Otherwise, overall maintenance, things like that, hasn't been an issue, and things have gone really well up to this point.
Yeah, that's a neat area over there. And I know for sure there's at least one brewery, I believe the 10K breweries over there. So they've got to be liking this. I think there's some sort of a wine establishment as well.
Correct. There's a number of kind of bar restaurant businesses on Jackson Street, First Avenue and Second Avenue. And most of them are participating in this. And the whole program's kind of a pilot for the state. This is our pilot, this 1 month. We'll run it a full summer next year. And then once that's complete, we'll be reporting back to the state in 2025 with all our findings of how things went and what worked and what didn't work. And maybe there's some changes to the language that was created to enable the district if the state considers maybe allowing other cities to do what we're doing.
Well, cool. You answered my question because I was going to ask, what is the next step? And so you said next summer, what would that be, like June, July, August, maybe?
We have a downtown sidewalk seating program. And so that usually starts in May and ends the first week of November, just before snowfall. And so we'll probably run it the same, consistent with that. Yeah. So we're going to be meeting with the businesses and kind of working out anything we want to do different or change or try to do better. And then we'll roll it out for a full season next summer is the plan.
And hey, I noticed in the news release from you folks, we're going to go out with a bang on Saturday. We've got a huge event in that area.
Yeah, it's called Vintage Fest. And sponsored by one of the local antique shops, dealers. And they have just a whole group of folks here and all kinds of goodies you can check out and vintage type of paraphernalia and product that if you're looking for that type of thing, there's quite a few people.
Jelly Bean and Julia is one of my favorite, but all kinds of vendors, music, Betty Danger's performing. And so, yeah, you'll go out on a bang. And then I noticed it says the pilot project actually runs through 10 p.m. Saturday. So you got a few more days to participate.
Right. Yep. And we were just going to do it for a month. And then we kind of run into Anoka being the Halloween capital of the world. We have all kinds of events and things going on. Because this is new, I mean, we weren't going to run the social district into all the Halloween activity and the parades and all those types of events. I know we kind of wanted to take it slow. The businesses wanted to kind of take it slow so we could get a feel for everything and how this might work, in preparation of a full rollout for the full season next year.
Well, thanks, Doug Borglund with the City of Anoka. It sounds like a lot of fun over there, and I might have to stop by a Vintage Fest this weekend.
Yeah, should be a good crowd, and hopefully the weather warms up a little, and we have just a beautiful weekend.
Yeah, hey, maybe we'll check in with you next spring when we reopen the social district for the whole summer.
All right, that sounds like a plan.
M&N's Brent Palm and Doug Borglund with the City of Anoka. Time for a quick break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Veteran suicide has become a disturbing trend over the last 20 years. Joining me today is Christy Stites, a suicide prevention coordinator with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
I wanted to visit with you. It's a pretty timely conversation coming up in a couple of days. October 7th is Minnesota Veteran Suicide Prevention and Awareness Day. And really wanted to visit with you and kind of dig a little bit further into this topic. We've heard, over and over again that veteran suicide is a problem in the state. Can you tell us a little bit about what you have been hearing and seeing over the years?
Well, we know that we lose about 100 veterans each year to suicide. The numbers do correlate with our overall numbers in the state. Veterans die by firearms at a far greater rate than the civilian population. Part of that is because they know how to use guns and they're trained to use guns. Women veterans die by a higher rate of firearm suicide than civilian with female population for that same reason. But one suicide is too many. So, we really focus on upstream approaches to combat getting to that crisis situation. So we know we need to know how to intervene, how to look for signs and symptoms, but how can we also work upstream to ensure overall health and wellness so that we don't come into a crisis situation?
And Christy, are we seeing any trends in age groups, I guess, of these vets dying by suicide?
Good question. So we have seen over the last few years an increase in 55 and older population of males, an increase, and also in rural populations, we see a higher rate of suicide in Minnesota.
All right. And, this is, I sometimes feel like not a fair question, but do we have any idea why veterans are dying by suicide?
Well, I love when people ask me that question because I've been working in this area. I've worked with the Minnesota National Guard as a contractor doing the same work. And what I have found is that two people can go through the exact same circumstance, whether it's combat or just stress of reintegration or retirement from the military. Two people can go through the same thing and have a different response based on the layering experiences of their life, starting back from their, from infancy even. So, trauma and things, or even as a child through their lens, experience something that they think was traumatic or was traumatic to them. Those things, if they're not taken care of and we don't learn healthy coping and living skills, those things matter. And so then you put someone in a situation where, they've had a breakup or they've had parents who were divorced or a death in the family, and now they're getting into the military, and then there's just layering and compounding experiences. And then when we see people coming into reintegration after a deployment, that's a retirement from their service, that's a big transition into a culture that they haven't really been living in. And so feeling like isolated, like they don't belong, maybe even a stranger in their own home at times. There's a lot of dynamics that, you know, the general population, if we're not educating ourselves on military and veteran culture, we don't know how to help them.
And, you know, I have to ask, how are veterans' families and friends playing into this picture?
Mm-hmm. Another good question. So, you know, suicide prevention overall is everyone's business. There's a call to action for us, and it's really simple, but it's just not always easy. So, I mean, reaching out and being a friend, looking people in the eyes and saying hello, even just something simple like that can really make a difference. So taking the time to come alongside someone or have a cup of coffee with someone, checking in on someone. If you know someone, if you know a veteran who maybe just lost a spouse or had a child who had an illness or, you know, lost their home or whatever the circumstance might be, you know, to check in on them and say, you know, that's a big deal. You know, that must be really hard. How can I help you? I care about you. I want to come alongside you. Sometimes just taking that time opens the floodgate where they can really share some other experiences. I just recently met some people from Camp Bliss up near Walker, Minnesota, and they were sharing how they had Vietnam veterans doing one of their camp weeks, and they took them out on a fishing excursion for Vietnam veterans. This was not recently, this was a couple years ago, and those veterans, they remained friends. They came off that fishing excursion and said they had never shared their experiences or talked to anyone about their experience in Vietnam except for that day. So those veterans have remained friends, and now they sponsor a camp up there, a camp week for Vietnam veterans specifically. So again, just having people get connected with one another and promoting that and being a caring, listening voice and hearing listener is so important.
And, you know, I think it's also fair to mention that there are so many resources available to our veterans these days. Mm-hmm. Can you highlight maybe some key areas where if there is a veteran listening that just hasn't really reached out for or utilized those resources, mm-hmm. what a good first step is? Mm-hmm.
Thanks for asking that. So, there is a link. The Link Vet is a number that people can call. And in Minnesota, only 30% of our veterans utilize their earned VA benefits. Now, MDVA, Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, we run all of the veteran homes, and we take care of our Minnesota veterans. There are different resources within Minnesota, but we partner with the federal VA. A lot of people don't know the difference between us, and we don't really care because our mission is the same. We want to make sure that veterans who have earned their benefits utilize them because that actually adds to the funding that they get, not it doesn't take away from. But some people don't. So I've talked to veterans who say, I only served 4 years. I don't, you know, I'm going to let other people utilize those benefits. And that's kind of false for them to believe that, because we really need them to have their benefits. So plugging into behavioral health, and maybe if they're connected, full connectedness, they have dental or homelessness help, you know, with combating homelessness. There's all kinds of resources available, whether it's through the VA, through Link Vet. You can go to our Minnesota.gov or MDVA, Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs website. Also, we have a suicide prevention page, but we also have all kinds of programs and services that are available to utilize. So there are tons and tons of resources in Minnesota. And so anyone could go to our website and connect with me, or there's another places to connect within that website where we're happy to connect you. That's really our role in veteran suicide prevention.
It's time for a quick break. Christy Stites will rejoin us right after this.
We asked kids what it took to be a dad. This is what they had to say.
A father is always present. I mean, what real father figure can you have if they're not there?
In order to be a good dad, you need to love your son. You need to put gas in your car so you don't break down in the middle of nowhere. And you need to make them breakfast. Yep.
I mean, just to maybe play like a board game with me, or to just stay home and play some video games with me. Just to do like that one little thing is what I really look forward to.
I'm not asking him to be a perfect dad, but he should try.
He's just a constant force in my life.
There's no other type of love like a dad's love because it's not comparable to anything else.
Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Saturday is Minnesota Veterans Suicide and Prevention Day, and joining me again this segment is Christy Stites with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Christy, tell us a little about what will be highlighted Saturday.
The fifth annual Veteran Suicide Prevention and Awareness Day. It's going to be in Bemidji this year. It moves around the state, and it's going to be at Paul Bunyan Park. It starts at 9 o'clock. The first hour for us is an hour of fellowship and connecting with over coffee. It sounds funny, but, you know, real mugs that our participants can take home and just to be able to connect. We do have resources that will be available and present. And this year in particular, there's a lot of partners that have come alongside to want to be involved in this event in the Bemidji area, which is really refreshing. But that is not really our focus. The focus, the program begins at 10. It's really only about 45 to 50 minutes, but it's really just a time. This came from a time to just wanting to take a pause and really honor the families and survivors of those who have lost a veteran in Minnesota to suicide, and to just use those lives and honor them in a way that will help save other lives. So it's really just a time to come together, bring awareness. This year we will have a couple of stories of two people who have attempted suicide and survived, and why they survived and was because they reached out and they got the help they needed and the resources were there. And so they have a good story, right? But we also have resources there, a foundation in particular in that area that didn't have that same outcome but have used that circumstance to really reach into communities, raise awareness, and help people have a language, a response, and to be able to look for the signs and symptoms and not be afraid to ask those tough questions.
Thanks again to my guest, Christy Stites, with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel.